They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights. On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew. Joining us on the Commons today, we have an old friend, Frank Short. Frank, thank you so much for joining us today.
Always fun to be here, Sue.
We have a very special show today, Frank. There's been a lot about fines lately, and I think that we need to set the record straight about fines. I think people need to understand what they're dealing with and what fines really are and what they're meant for. So,
you and I have talked a lot about fines and the authority of associations to fine over the years, and I know that on your website, you've got a show that we did on this specific issue where we talked about the Gilman case and we talked about the Foley case. We'll talk more about those on the show tonight. But the incentive for associations to fine people is something that CAI will downplay. We really are reluctant to use power. We would never use it except as a last resort. The real intent of the fining provisions isn't to punish people; it's to get them to come in and talk to the board so that we can amicably resolve a disagreement in the community. Well, baloney. There's a publication called the Community Association Management Insider, aimed at an audience of community association managers and maybe some board members and CAI types of all cloths. They wrote an article in January 2009 on the subject, cash-strapped associations may pursue non-assessment income. Only got to read a couple of sentences from this so that you'll see right away what's going on here, right away. In this article, you have the following, quote, every association is looking for new ways to make money, said Tim Snowden, deputy director of property management for, and Shu, I am not making this up, for Heil, Smart and Goley
in smart is
Evanston. Quote continues, after all, they can only raise assessments and fines so many times. Assessments and fines.
And fines.
From our friends at Heil, Smart, and Goley in Evanston. And my sympathies to anybody who has a name like that for a management company for homeowners associations.
Yeah, you know, you'd think twice about hiring someone with a name like that, wouldn't you?
Unless you were doing it as a comedy.
That's
we're going to hire the management company with the funniest name. There's a lot to be said about having fun.
Yes. Gee whiz, you want to let Heil and
so Heil. That's the incentive. Let's just get right to the point. They want to make money.
Yeah, of course. Free money.
Absolutely. What's an easy way to do it? You said years and years ago there were property management companies, and I believe it was the great state of Texas, that would go around and market themselves saying, we will manage your association for free.
Right.
The only thing we want is what?
We want to be able to fine people and charge them for all kinds of documents and all kinds of other things. So they were not going to charge the association. They were going to squeeze it out of the homeowner.
What a concept.
Yeah.
All right. So that's point one. In addition to that incentive for the management companies, you have something else out there that's called variously the priority of payment scheme.
Yes.
The priority of payment scam.
Mm-hmm.
If you Google the term priority of payment scheme or priority of payment scam, you'll see immediately how this thing works. You'll see immediately who's behind it, and you'll see immediately what it is intended to do. And what you'll read on the internet is basically a description of an association financial management policy that says, if your assessment is $100 a month and we have fined you $50 and you send us your regular $100 assessment, we, the association, will apply the first $50 of your assessment to the fine.
Mm-hmm.
And that will leave you underpaying your assessment. So that, well, if we get to a court, we're never going to say that we're trying to collect a fine from you. No, we're just trying to collect your assessments that you have underpaid. And they have managed in a lot of states, including Virginia, to get provisions into the Property Owners Association Act that say this type of charge shall be treated as an assessment for the purposes of Section 55516I of the Property Owners Association Act, which is the provision about non-judicial foreclosure.
It's how to collect those charges, right?
Yeah. So, well, he didn't pay his assessments, Yana, and, well, you know, there were fines in there with the assessments, and he didn't pay those either, but we can treat the fines that we imposed just like they were assessments, so he hadn't paid his assessments, and I don't know why we're talking to you, Your Honor, because we're going to sell this guy's house on the courthouse steps by non-judicial foreclosure. We don't need no judge.
No, we don't. We can do whatever the hell we want.
That's the idea. That's the priority of payment scam when you tie it in with fines.
I think Texas managed to do away with that this year.
I think Texas may have, and as we're going to, before this show ends, we'll talk about another state a little bit closer to home.
Yep.
That also put in a fix that I'm sure has got a lot of, the only bad thing about it is a lot of CAI people will be moving from Maryland to Virginia, I'm afraid.
No, they'll go there because they have greater protections. They'll live
right
there because
yeah,
they have greater protections. You know, yeah, they don't live in associations,
no,
right?
They don't.
So, all right. Well, we've got too much important stuff to talk about without me being silly.
All right, so we're going to go straight on to the Gilman case, which is a Virginia Supreme Court case from 1982. It was litigated on behalf of the unit owner, Mr. Gilman, by our friend, a very good lawyer, the late Fred Goldbecker. The Unit Owners Association was a condominium, but it wasn't the condominium that we're used to talking about on the show. You might want to call it a truck parking facility. It was a commercial activity. There were a lot of commercial enterprises going on there. And Mr. Gilman ran a business that was a trash service. And he would bring his trash trucks into this condominium. And the trash trucks, believe it or not, smelled badly. And the association didn't like that. And the association began fining Mr. Gilman. And when Mr. Gilman didn't pay the fines, they levied, placed a lien on his condominium unit. And Mr. Gilman went to see Fred Goldbecker. Fred Goldbecker filed suit to quiet title to the condominium unit. And the case wound up in the Supreme Court of Virginia. Now, this was 1982. This is before anybody had thought of the Property Owners Association Act. And this was an issue that Fred Goldbecker, who didn't beat around too many bushes in all the time we knew him, Fred went straight to constitutional issues. courts are reluctant to decide things, contract disputes, based on constitutional issues. Courts like nice, neat packages where they've got a set of governing documents, they've got a statute in front of them, they apply the governing documents to what the statute says, and that will be the basis of the decision. There really wasn't a statute. When Fred Goldbecker brought this case to the Virginia Supreme Court, the court didn't have a lot of problems talking about the Constitution. So let's talk about some of the key language in the Gilman case. The citation to Gilman is 223 Virginia, 752, 292 Southeast 2nd, 378. And it was June 18th, 1982, again by the Supreme Court of Virginia.
Frank, the case is available on my website.
Right.
For anyone who can't look around, just go to the website and they'll find it.
In fact, I think that all the cases we're going to talk about tonight are probably on your website. The court said, the association contends here that Article 3, Paragraph 2M of its bylaws — we're going to get back to the importance of bylaws or the relative importance of bylaws in a minute — providing for the levying of fines is not unlawful or unconstitutional as violative of the due process guarantee of either the federal or state constitutions, based on bylaws. The court says the Gilmans did not pay the $8,000 fine within 10 days, and the board levied an additional fine of $8,000. Ultimately, it levied fines totaling $20,500 on the Gilmans for their alleged violation and filed memoranda of liens in that amount in the clerk's office of Fairfax County.
And that was back in 1982.
1982.
When $20,000 was worth a lot more than it is today.
So the court went on to analyze Fred Goldbecker's constitutional challenge. And the court said, the imposition of a fine is a governmental power. The sovereign cannot be preempted of this power, and the power cannot be delegated or exercised other than in accordance with the provisions of the constitutions of the United States and Virginia. Neither can a fine be imposed, disguised as a what? As an assessment.
As a mushroom.
But we just want to treat it like an assessment because that's what the POA says that we can.
We were going to hide it.
The court said that the mischief that could be wrought, if it were constitutionally permissible for a condominium association to levy fines on and exact penalties of unit owners, is dramatically illustrated by this case.
We've seen it so often since then as well, haven't we, Frank?
But the Supreme Court of Virginia had no problem whatsoever finding on behalf of Mr. Gilman for what they unambiguously called a constitutional issue. Now, the problem with Gilman as a practical matter is the court didn't analyze any provisions of the federal or Virginia Constitution. So although many of us were very sure which provisions that they had in mind, mm-hmm. you couldn't point back to that case and say, well, they were obviously talking about the provisions of the Virginia Constitution about that addressed the judicial power. They say it was a governmental and that the legislature couldn't delegate that power except as provided by the Constitution of Virginia and the United States. So what we believed, I think we believed correctly, the Gilman case was talking about was an unconstitutional delegation by the legislature of a power that the Constitution gave to the judiciary. Legislatures can't do that. We explained that in some greater length in the discussion about Gilman that's already on your website, and we'll get to the Foley case. In a minute, we will talk about it some more, and we'll talk about the express language and the express constitutional analysis that the Foley case brought to bear. So Gilman was 1982, and the next significant case on the issue of fining was 10 years later, and it was a circuit court case out of the Circuit Court of Spotsylvania County, and it was called Skeen, S-K-E-E-N, versus Indian Acres. This was, again, this is not a traditional homeowners association or a traditional condominium association. Indian Acres was kind of like a campground,
mm-hmm.
Where you were a member of the campground, and you could come in there and you could use the campground and do all this cool stuff. The circuit court said that the question presented is whether Indian Acres Club has the authority to adopt and enforce a system of fines or monetary penalties against property owners for infractions of the rules and regulations of the Indian Acres subdivision. Now, remember, this is 1982. This is 1982, we had Gilman. 1992, we have Indian Acres. What happened in between 82 and 92? We had the POA.
89 is when the POA came out.
So.
I remember it well, Frank.
The court, this is again the Spotsylvania County Circuit Court says, in Unit Owners Association versus Gilman, the Supreme Court, we're talking about the Supreme Court of Virginia, held that a condominium property owners association could not impose fines on unit owners because no authority existed for such fines in the Condominium Act. That's kind of interesting because I don't think that...
It doesn't...
Yeah, I don't think that the Virginia Supreme Court cared much about what was in the Condominium Act or what wasn't in the condominium. They decided the case on a constitutional ground. They go on, the court explained that the imposition of a fine is a governmental power which cannot be preempted or delegated other than in accordance with the federal and state constitutions. Well, okay, if that's true, what difference would the Condominium Act? Mr. Skeen did not bring a constitutional challenge the way Fred Goldbecker did in the Gilman case. And this was specifically picked up on by the Circuit Court of Spotsylvania County. They said this. They said, whether the legislature can lawfully delegate authority to impose fines to property owners' associations is not to be decided in this case. They specifically avoided the issue. They say, in his memoranda, Mr. Skeen disavows any attack on the validity of the statutes that grant authority in certain associations or to certain associations to impose fines and penalties. Instead, he relies on his contention that none of these statutes applies to the Indian Acres subdivision. That's what the court said, and we're going to get to in a minute. The court said something that simply doesn't track with that language. They said the court agrees with Skeen's assertion that the club has no inherent power to adopt and enforce a system of fines for infractions by property owners. See Gilman. They have no inherent power to adopt it.
It makes sense to me, Frank.
They have no inherent power to adopt it. That means they can't adopt it. Thus, only if the power had been delegated by the General Assembly may the club exercise such authority. Wait a minute, court. Didn't you just say we weren't going to touch the issue of whether the General Assembly could delegate that power? What is the authority of the General Assembly to delegate? We never get there because Skeen didn't raise it. So we go on. They start to talk about the POA. The Property Owners Association Act was enacted in 1989. The schedule of fines about which Skeen complains was adopted in 1987. Can the club rely on this legislation, which was not in existence at the time it adopted the schedule of fines and attempted to impose those fines on Skeen to legitimize its actions? They say a few minutes later. At the time the club adopted its schedule of fines and brought and sought to impose such fines on Skeen, it had no authority to do so. See Gilman. By its terms, the act does not affect that circumstance. We're still talking about the act. The court said, for the foregoing reasons, the court is of the opinion that the schedule of fines adopted by the club and appended to its rules and regulations as a schedule of monetary penalties is invalid, and the club is without authority to enforce these assessments against the property owner. The court is further of the opinion, and this is where it just gets a little bit bizarre, that the Property Owners Association Act empowers the club by its terms to promulgate rules and regulations and to create a schedule of charges for violations of such rules and regulations. I think we said twice now that the court wasn't going to address that issue.
But they did anyway, huh?
Well, that's what lawyers call dicta. They kind of say, oh, by the way, even though this is not germane to our decision, we've already decided it. But by the way, the association does have this power. Have a nice day. That's why Skeen has always perplexed. They conclude with this language. The court further holds that the Property Owners Association Act, which empowers the club to adopt a schedule of charges for violations of its rules and regulations, cannot be applied retrospectively to legitimize the schedule of fines under review in this litigation. Then, just to show that we're all pals here, they said, the club will not be required to refund any fines heretofore levied against Skeen. No award of attorney fees will be made, and each party will bear his costs herein expended. Well, at least we've improved the law in that area, and if you don't believe me, you can call Maria Ferran, or you can call her association.
Yeah, that's still ongoing.
Yes.
Yeah, that's kind of bizarre, that one, Frank.
It is a little bit. It is a little bit bizarre. I would have to agree. So that was 1992. Forward to 1995, and we have a case called Lake Monticello Owners Association versus Jared Lake, L-A-K-E. Lake Monticello is a Property Owners Association Act in the traditional sense. It's not a commercial outfit. It's not a campground. There's well over 1,000 homes in Lake Monticello, single-family homes, and I think there's a section of condos. Mr. Jared Lake was a homeowner, and he and a lot of other homeowners who lived in Lake Monticello wanted to put something on the ballot for an annual election to change the governing documents. What did they want to change? They wanted to make sure that the governing documents, among other things, did not give Lake Monticello authority to fine the homeowners. And they collected signatures and they got a petition, and they brought that petition to the board of directors and said, we want this on the ballot. And for all intents and purposes, they had the right number of signatures to mm-hmm. qualify to put it on the ballot. But the board of directors of Lake Monticello refused to put that issue on the ballot. The Supreme Court of Virginia had some difficulty with the board's position in that regard. What they said was the Property Owners Association Act vests in a majority of the LMOA members as members of a property owner's association the right to, quote, repeal or amend any rule or regulation adopted by the board of directors. And we have, after that, a footnote, footnote 4. And we're going to read footnote 4 in a minute, and we're going to read footnote 4 again later tonight, because there's another case that comes back to this case and relies, in their opinion, on footnote 4. Before we get to footnote 4, we're just going to continue with the text. The right to repeal or amend any such rule or regulation adopted by the board of directors, if such rule or regulation has been adopted by the board, quote, with respect to the use of the common areas or other such areas of responsibility assigned to the association by the declaration. The court goes on to say there is no similar statutory right given to shareholders under the Virginia Stock Corporation Act, under the Virginia Non-Stock Corporation Act, or to members under the Virginia Non-Stock Corporation Act. Court says that Jared Lake and some other members of LMOA were dissatisfied with a number of the bylaws, rules and regulations, and policies adopted by the board of directors and contained in the LMOA policy manual. Section 4.08 of the bylaws gives LMOA members the right to make proposals, quote, appropriate for member action, unquote, for inclusion in the proxy statement and notice to an annual meeting. Acting pursuant to this bylaw provision, Mr. Lake and those other property owners filed a number of proposals to amend certain of LMOA's bylaws, rules, and regulations, and policies at the next annual meeting of the LMOA members. A summary of the proposed amendments pertinent to this appeal follows, and I'm only going to read one of them. Repeal of a provision of the LMOA's Compliance Committee's assessment of, quote, penalties, including the assessing of charges and similar sanctions, unquote, by transferring that function to the courts. What a concept.
Can you say that again, Frank?
What the homeowners wanted to do was to repeal a provision of the LMOA Compliance Committee's assessment of penalties, including the assessing of charges and similar sanctions, by transferring that function to who? The courts.
Okay. So in plain language, they wanted to do away with fines and they wanted the association to go to court.
They wanted the association to go to court. They wanted the association to assume its burden of proof.
Right.
In a neutral forum where all the parties would have due process.
Right.
That's what they wanted.
Yes.
And the association could come in and get an injunction. The association could come in and seek monetary damages. But the association would have the burden of proof. The dispute would be decided by a judge of competent jurisdiction and not by the board of directors or their hand-picked compliance committee. And there would be real due process. What a concept.
So in other words, a little adult supervision.
Yes. So how did the board respond?
Uh-huh.
Bylaw 4.08C1 and 6, respectively, provide that a member proposal, quote, may be disqualified, unquote, from inclusion in the LMOA proxy statement and notice of the meeting if it, quote, is not a proper subject for action by members, unquote, or if, quote, it deals with a matter relating to the ordinary business operations of the association, unquote. Relying on these bylaw provisions and other bylaw provisions which LMOA has since waived, the board ruled that the proposals, quote, did not qualify for inclusion on the LMOA proxy/ballot and refused to include them in the proxy. This had the effect of kind of irritating the Supreme Court of Virginia.
I like it when they get irritated, don't you?
So let's see what footnote 4 had to say. Footnote 4 said, to the extent that LMOA's duly adopted rules and regulations expressly so provide, Code Section 55513B gives LMOA's Board of Directors the right to assess charges against members for violation of LMOA's rules and regulations. Since the part of LMOA's policy manual that is in the record contains a schedule of charges and penalties for violation of LMOA's rules and regulations, we assume that LMOA's rules and regulations provide for the imposition of such charges and penalty. The homeowner won. Right. Supreme Court said, given the language of POA 55513 and the fact that LMOA members must submit to these rules, regulations, and binding policies as long as they own homes in Lake Monticello, we think that the proposals, if enacted by majority vote, would merely impose limitations on the board's powers authorized by the code section. Accordingly, we conclude that the board of directors erred. That means they made a mistake in excluding these proposals from the proxy statement.
Well, that's nice to know that the court realized that the board made a mistake.
Yes. We will enter a declaratory judgment in favor of Lake consistent with this opinion. So that, again, was 1995. Now, we leave for the first time the Commonwealth of Virginia, and we move north to the state of Rhode Island, and we move forward in time to the year 1999. Usually, when we talk about a progression of a legal matter, we start with the lower court, and then we say what the Supreme Court did. In the case of Foley versus Osborne Court Condominium Association, we're going to go straight to the Rhode Island Supreme Court, and then we're going to go to the lower court. And the reason we're going to do that is because what the Rhode Island Supreme Court did was they remanded this case, which had been heard at a trial court, appealed to the Supreme Court of Rhode Island, When it got there, the Supreme Court said, this is going back to the trial court with instructions. The instructions were as follows. We remand this case to the Superior Court for findings on whether the plaintiff's constitutional rights in this case were violated by the provisions of the 1982 Condominium Act. In other words, we're not looking at your governing documents here, Osborne Court Condominium Association. We don't care what your governing documents say. We're looking at whether the provisions of the Rhode Island equivalent, the Rhode Island counterpart to the Virginia Property Owners Associations Act, are constitutional. Provisions of the Condominium Act that authorize a condominium association to foreclose on a property without the necessity of a judicial proceeding. And what would have been the basis of that foreclosure, Shu? Would have attempted to collect fines.
We're going to make money for the association, Frank. Isn't that what it's all about?
That's what it's all about. That is what it's all about. Not just the association, but
the
management company and the CAI lawyers. The Supreme Court went on to say several of the plaintiff's arguments on appeal, plaintiffs being Mr. Foley, challenged the constitutionality of the 1982 Act. And in particular, the plaintiff argued that the actions of the committee, the condominium committee, taken pursuant to provisions of the 1982 Act were illegal because they stemmed from an improper delegation of the Rhode Island Constitution Article 10 judicial power to a private entity. An unconstitutional delegation by the legislature of a judicial power.
That is what, where have we heard that before?
That is what was left unsaid by the Virginia Supreme Court in Gilman. They did not explain it. So the Rhode Island Supreme Court sends the case back to the trial court. When it gets to the trial court says the following, and I'm going to be reading for a while here. The Supreme Court remanded this case to the Superior Court with directions to determine whether Title 34, Chapter 36.1 of the Rhode Island General Laws entitled Condominium Law, hereinafter referred to as the 1982 Act, represents an unconstitutional of judicial or police power to the condominium association, a private entity. The court further directed that if the trial justice determined the delegation of power to be constitutional, she must then make an additional finding. She must determine whether applying the 1982 Act to the subject dispute significantly modifies the relationship between the plaintiff and the condominium association. The declaration of the condominium was recorded prior to 1982 under Title 34, Chapter 36 of the Rhode Island General Laws entitled Condominium Ownership Act, herein after referred to as the Old Act. Article 10, Rhode Island Constitution, provides Section 1, power vested in the court. The judicial power of this state shall be vested in one Supreme Court and in such inferior courts as the General Assembly may, from time to time, order and establish. That's the Rhode Island Constitution. Now, Virginia also has a constitution, and the Virginia Constitution provides the following. Article 6, Section 1, Judicial Power, Jurisdiction. The judicial power of the Commonwealth shall be vested in a Supreme Court and in other such courts of original and appellate jurisdiction, subordinate to the Supreme Court, as the General Assembly may from time to time establish. The courts of general jurisdiction, trial courts of general jurisdiction, appellate courts, and other such courts as may be so designated by the General Assembly shall be known as courts of record. The operative word being courts.
So many people are afraid of going to court, and they're trying to circumvent that at all costs, but the courts, when you go to court and you're with a competent attorney, you can win if you're in the right. Right, Frank?
Yep. I think we may have had some experience with that, Shu.
you think so?
Returning to the trial court opinion in Foley on remand, the court said the pertinent provisions of the 1982 Act are set forth below. Sections 34-36.1-3.02, entitled Powers of Unit Associations, Unit Owner Associations, provides that the condominium association has the power to adopt and amend bylaws and rules and regulations, further to impose charges for late payment of assessments, and after notice and an opportunity to be heard, to levy reasonable fines for violations of the declaration, bylaws, and rules and regulations of the association. So, the legislature of Rhode Island conferred upon an entity, a private entity, that didn't happen to be a court, the power to levy reasonable fines.
I love that word, reasonable.
Reasonable. Because the $20,000 that they assessed Mr. Gilman, that was probably reasonable.
Absolutely.
Now, here's what the court said when they applied the analysis that they'd been directed to apply by the Supreme Court. It is the authority to impose fines and enforce them that distinguishes the 1982 Act from other legislation. Power to impose daily fines further distinguishes the 1982 Act, and again, that's the Rhode Island counterpart to the Virginia POA, from other statutes. Although the unit owner is afforded an initial hearing before the fine is imposed, the daily fine continues to accrue without requiring that the owner be given additional opportunities to be heard. It is arguable that the association can permit the daily fines to accrue until they reach the amount of the owner's equity in the unit. And then the association can choose to foreclose on the lien and deprive the owner of his or her interest in the condominium or the proceeds of its sale.
Jeez.
The power to impose daily fines, which continue to accrue until a violation is corrected, can be compared to the inherent power of a court to punish for civil contempt. Go on to note, it is interesting that the inherent power of the court to impose fines for civil contempt does not permit the court to compel the contemnor to forfeit his or her property. They say further, when the court examines the power delegated to condominium associations under the 1982 Act to impose and enforce fines, it concludes that this is a delegation of judicial power in the same constitutional sense referred to in G.D. Taylor and Company versus Place. There's a citation in any opinion. It may safely be said that to hear and decide adversary suits at law and in equity with the power of rendering judgment and entering upon decrees according to the decision to be executed by the process and power of the tribunal deciding, or of another tribunal acting under its orders and according to its direction, is the exercise of a judicial power in the constitutional sense. The association is authorized to hear disputes concerning allegations that the unit owners have violated the declaration, bylaws, or rules or regulations of the Condominium Act. The 1982 Act permits the association to determine these controversies and to issue orders directing violators to pay fines. Finally, the Act empowers the association with the ability to enforce its orders by depriving a violator of his property by foreclosure. In this capacity, the association acts as a tribunal exercising judicial power. For the foregoing reasons, the court finds that the 1982 Act represents an unconstitutional delegation of judicial or police power to the condominium association, a private entity.
I love that because that actually finds that the act is unconstitutional.
It certainly does. Let's return for a few other bright moments in the Constitution of Virginia. The Constitution of Virginia begins with Article 1, which is a Declaration of Rights. It's kind of a state counterpart to the Bill of Rights. It's a wonderful document. Article 1, Section 5 is entitled Separation of Legislative, Executive, and Judicial Departments, Periodical Elections. And it says that the legislative, executive, and judicial departments of the Commonwealth should be separate and distinct, and that the members thereof may be restrained from oppression by feeling and participating the burdens of the people. They should at fixed periods be reduced to a private person and returned to that body from which they were originally taken, and the vacancies supplied by the regular elections in which all or any part of former members shall again be eligible or ineligible as the laws may direct. Article 1, Section 11 is entitled Due Process of Law, Obligation of Contract, Taking or Damaging of Private Property, Prohibited Discrimination. And that provides in part that in controversies respecting property, and in suits between man and man, trial by jury is preferable to any other and ought to be held sacred. The General Assembly may limit the number of jurors for civil cases in courts of record to not less than 5 courts of record. Constitution of Virginia further provides, when it talks about the powers of the General Assembly, this is Article 4, Section 14. There are limitations on the powers of the General Assembly. The General Assembly shall not enact any local, special, or private law in the following cases. Two of those cases are the creating private corporations or amending, renewing, or extending the charters thereof, granting to any private corporation, and the next word is association, or individual, any special, exclusive right, privilege, or immunity. So, association is empowered to fine you. You have no corresponding power to fine an association.
Well, that's not right, is it?
Not right, and maybe Fred Goldbecker had that provision in mind as well. That's the applicability of the Constitution of Virginia.
Frank, before we go on.
So now we're going to fast forward all the way to September of 2011, and we're going to talk about a case called Leaves Crossing Homeowners Association versus Zanoni. This is in the Circuit Court of Loudoun County. This case later reached the Supreme Court of Virginia on other issues that we're not going to discuss because what we're talking about tonight is fines. And we have talked at great length about the Ferron case.
Yes, we have.
The Ferron case was from the Circuit Court of Fairfax County. This case, the Zanoni case, was from the Circuit Court of the next county over in Loudoun County out west of us. Again, 2011. Mr. Zanoni allegedly violated the governing documents of Lee's Crossing, violated architectural standards in the construction of his house. And he was fined by the Homeowners Association. Mr. Zanoni basically made the same challenge that Mr. and Mrs. Ferron made in the Fairfax County case. Now, the circuit court in Loudoun County said that the evidence reflects that on October 6, 2001, the board of directors of the plaintiff, that's the HOA, adopted a resolution authorizing the board to assess charges for violations of the declaration or rules or regulations, and provides that the charge shall not exceed $50 for a single offense or $10 per day for any offense of a continuing nature limited to a period of 90 days. So the board of directors voted to give themselves power to fine.
Gee, that never happens, does it?
Well, and that's what Mr. Zanoni complained about, exactly as Mr. and Mrs. Ferron complained about. Here's what the court said next. The court takes note of Ferron versus Old Belhaven Town Owners Association, in which the Fairfax County Court found that the authority to assess charges under 55.513B is limited to situations where an association's declaration expressly allows it to impose fines, or its declaration expressly allows it to adopt rules and regulations which impose fines. The court, however, finds that the plain language of 55.513B allows the Board of Directors to authorize charges in either the declaration or the rules and regulations. Although the Virginia Supreme Court has not directly addressed this issue, the Supreme Court noted in footnote 4 of the Lake Monticello case that the Property Owners Association, if their rules and regulations expressly provided, could assess charges for violations of rules and regulations. The court therefore finds that the plaintiff, pursuant to its resolution adopted October 6, 2011, has the authority to assess charges for violations of the declaration and rules. We have Fairfax County Circuit Courts coming down.
So what's it going to take to get them all on the same R sheet of music?
It's going to take the Shadowwood case. you.
It's going to take the Shadowwood case. Are we there yet?
We're there. Okay. The Supreme Court of Virginia, June 2012. Shadowwood Condominium Association et al. Against the Fairfax County Redevelopment and Housing Authority. This case addresses the fining provision of the Virginia Condominium Act. And you and I watched this case with some trepidation.
Yes, we did.
Fairfax County Redevelopment and Housing Authority basically was a landlord within the Shadowwood Condominium Association.
Right.
And they put low-income people into housing units in this condominium. And when the when those tenants violated the rules and regulations of Shadowwood, then the Shadowwood Condominium Association assessed fines. But guess who they fined?
They fined the county.
They fined Fairfax County.
Aww. Now, and what's good for the goose isn't always good for the gander.
Well, you know, Shu, our trepidation with having Fairfax County as a plaintiff in this case rose to a pretty high level. Because if there's one thing that Fairfax County loves, it is homeowners associations.
The more the merrier.
The Office of Consumer Protection, if you call the Office of Consumer Protection and you complain about a homeowners association, the first line that you'll get is that, well, the homeowners association is the consumer.
Right.
You're not a consumer.
Right. Yeah.
And
that's
so
true.
What's wrong with this picture? Anyway, Fairfax County said we're not paying no stinking fines, and they took the Shadowwood Association to court, and they won, and the case went up to the Supreme Court of Virginia. And here's what the Supreme Court of Virginia said, Shu. You'll hear something familiar here in a minute. They said the power exercised by an association is contractual in nature and is the creation of the condominium documents to which all unit owners subjected themselves in purchasing their units. That language is a citation to Gilman.
Right.
Okay. Now, Gilman didn't turn on what the condominium document said, because the condominium documents of Gilman said, we can fine you.
Yeah.
So here we have them pointing back to condominium documents. They went on to say that the circuit court did not err in finding that the assessments levied against the Fairfax County Redevelopment and Housing Authority were beyond the Shadowwood Condominium Association's authority as defined in its governing documents, and that the policy resolution authorizing the assessments was therefore invalid. They explained further in their own footnote. Because the Shadowwood Condominium Association lacked the authority in its own governing documents to levy the assessments at the time, levy the assessments at issue, its assignment of error regarding Code 5579.80:2 is moot. That's a citation of, you know, to the Condominium Act that authorizes associations to That statute authorizes an association to assess charges for a rule violation, quote, to the extent that the condominium instruments or rules duly adopted pursuant thereto expressly so provide, unquote. By its plain terms, the statute is permissive in nature. It does not confer authority to an association beyond that in the association's governing documents. The court does not decide. The court does not decide whether the statute could be applied retroactively to a condominium association whose documents predated its enactment. There was no constitutional challenge raised or decided in the Shadowwood case.
By the county.
This is the Supreme Court of Virginia.
Yeah, but the county is the plaintiff.
The county is the plaintiff.
So the
county won.
County won, but they didn't invoke.
They did not bring a constitutional challenge. And most good lawyers will tell you that we don't like to bring constitutional challenges. We would, if we can win this case without bringing a constitutional issue, that's the way we want to win it. We don't want to put the court in the position of having to find an act of the legislature was unconstitutional.
We've got to protect them, legislators, as a last resort. Right?
What troubles me about the Shadowwood case is that they don't talk about the requirement that the language be in the declaration. They talk about governing documents. Governing documents include declarations, that's at the top. Then you have bylaws, then you have rules and regulations. So Shadowwood had a rule of regulation. That was not good enough. The rule of regulation was one that the board of directors adopted. To change the declaration to give the association the power that the association wanted, the homeowners, the unit owners, would have had to vote. And there's probably in Shadowwood, just like there is in some other places that we know, a requirement for a supermajority to vest a board of directors with such power. And a supermajority is required for a pretty good reason.
I think it ought to be 100% affirmative, but that's just me.
Well, our neighbors to the north are in pretty close accord with you and me and what we would like to see done legislatively to fix some of the mess that that has been created in the Virginia Property Owners Association Act. This is a press release came out about a week ago. It says, Maryland governor signs bill requiring liens to be based only on delinquent assessments and not on other charges such as fines. Governor O'Malley has signed into law legislation passed by the Maryland General Assembly that amends the Maryland Contract Lien Act as it relates to the foreclosure of liens by condominiums and homeowners associations. The new law modifies Section 14-204 of the Real Property Article of the Maryland Annotated Code to prohibit condominiums and homeowners associations from foreclosing on liens for anything other than delinquent, periodic, or special assessments, meaning that unpaid fines may not be the basis for a lien foreclosure. Additionally, the new law requires that related costs and fees be limited to, quote, reasonable costs and attorney fees directly related to the filing of the lien and not exceeding the amount of the delinquent assessments. How many times have we seen cases where you have a couple of hundred lousy dollars of delinquent assessments, and you know the association lawyers will play that out and string that out and churn the file to get thousands and thousands of dollars out of it?
Well, I think one of the reasons this was done was the homeowner who was $225 behind in fines, not legitimate assessments, was charged $50,000 in legal fees to collect those fines.
Well, after all, we have the priority of payments, and you realize that the fines are really assessments. You're calling them fines.
You call them fines. But, I mean, the abuses are incredible, Frank.
Yes.
The abuses are amazing.
Well, someplace in Maryland, in a CAI law office, they're playing taps. And on that happy note, that's all I've got for this show.
So the bottom line, Frank, is fines are bad. Go to court.
Go to court. Associations. Go to court. Assume the burden of proof. Let's see how you do in front of a real judge. Because we know a couple of associations that when they got in front of a real judge, it bordered on the comical.
Actually, you can read some of that stuff. There's some of that on my website. Go read it. I think it's kind of fun to read. Frank, thank you so much. Thank you so much for setting us straight on fines. It's a discussion that's needed to take place for a long time. And I couldn't think of anyone better than you to do it. So for that, a huge thank you.
It was my pleasure. And hopefully, hopefully we'll be able to bring some of the right thinking that they showed up in Maryland into the Commonwealth of Virginia before too long.
We'll try. We'll do our best.
Thanks
a lot, Frank.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.